Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Madness. Upset picks, Final Four selections. We've got that for you and more on a college basketball edition of SEC Football Unfiltered, where we leave football behind this week and trade it for hoops because it's NCAA Tournament Week. I'm Blake Topmeyer alongside John Adams. John, I think this is probably my favorite sporting week of the year. Jam-packed with basketball 4 days in a row. I love seeing the upsets every year, teams that maybe you don't see all season, getting the limelight for a couple days in March, and we get to put football on the back burner for a week as college hoops take center stage. Where does this sporting event rank for you?
It ranks really high. It probably used to be number one just as an event, but I'm still more of a college football guy, so I always give the edge to college football over basketball. I don't like the tournament now as much as I did, say, 10 years ago. A lot of that has to do with guys going from leaving early for the NBA. I would see a team in the NCAA tournament. As you said, you see teams that you haven't seen all year. And all of a sudden you said, man, I really like that team, boy. And they've got four starters coming back. I want to watch that team next year. But no, those guys are gone. And then you have the transfer portal too. So, yeah, I just don't have the same interest. But I think the anticipation of those Friday opening acts for the NCAA tournament are the best thing going. Because as you point out, so many weird things can happen. You won't have upsets of this magnitude in college football. Of course, in a college football playoff, you won't have this many teams either. But it's just the idea of this sport. Things can go so haywire, and it doesn't matter how good you were in the regular season, you can have an off night. It still comes down to putting the ball in the basket. And that's not an exact science. Teams just have off days for whatever reason. And off day send you home in this tournament.
Yeah, it is so much different than football because if you got the biggest, fastest guys in football, like I don't feel like you're going to lose that on a random Saturday. You know, I think it would be so much harder for your elite teams to be upset in that fashion in football. Not even talking about like a 1-16, but you know, if the college football playoff expanded even to 32 teams. And so, you know, you're going to have a one seed play like a 32 seed in the first round. I mean, you know, the 32nd best team in the NCAA tournament for basketball, they could beat a one seed in college hoops. In football, that's just not happening. And I think you're right. I think Thursday and Friday are what people enjoy most of this event. That first round where you know, you're jam-packed with games from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m., and we hear so much talk right now, John, from the conference commissioners, particularly the Power Four conference commissioners, about the possibility of expanding this tournament. Now, I think there's some idea that like more basketball would be better for fans, and there's really nothing you could do that would turn people away from the NCAA tournament. I'm not so sure about that, though, like because I think about what you just said. Like people love the Thursday and Friday action. That's, I think, why people. That and gambling and brackets are why people fall in love with this tournament. And I just think if you make this tournament bigger and bigger and start tinkering around with the schedule, the format, you know, anything that maybe reduces the chance for some first round upsets of the top teams, I do think you could risk turning some people away from this event. If you start tinkering around too much, change the format, change the layout of the bracket. I don't know. Maybe I just fall into that category of don't mess with a good thing. But I really think the commissioners ought to be careful. I doubt that they will because they'll chase money. But I think they ought to be careful before they start tinkering around too much with the NCAA tournament.
Of course they will chase money. And I'm sure the SEC commissioner, Greg Sankey, thinks All 14 teams next year, 16 teams, should be in the NCAA tournament. Why put a team from a lower-level conference in the tournament when you know it's not as good as the worst team in the SEC? So, yeah, but that's what lends itself to so much interest, is the possibility of a team coming out of nowhere. And I really think – I talk about how – I don't like it as much as I did maybe 10 years ago, because I get accustomed to seeing players and I want to see them next year, but they're gone next year. But one thing to me that really helped the tournament was a three-point shot. I think that going back, I think it was maybe in 87. I might have been before then. But I remember that 87 team, Providence team. Was so good on the threes. I remember it. I think I might be missing on this now, but I think I recall I was at the game watching it beat Alabama. Just a blaze of three-pointers. I think that increases the upset factor, because I've probably covered 25 NCAA tournaments from start to finish, and that seemed to me to be an equalizer. Maybe a mid-major team couldn't come up with the 6'11 dominant shot blocking force in the middle, but it could come up with some three-point guys. And I've seen so many teams get on a hot shooting streak from three-point range. You get three guys going, and it's just like they're almost unbeatable. So that really adds a lot to me. Just talking about it, I'm ready for it to start. I wish the tournament started as soon as our podcast ended.
Your memory is a good one, John. It'd be a Providence as a sixth seed went to the Final Four that 87 year, beat Alabama, beat Georgetown. So you're spot on there. You're sharp as a tack still.
That was Billy Donovan.
For
Providence. Yeah, hitting those threes.
So as we look at this event, eight teams qualified from the SEC. The league is undeniably better top to bottom. Well, I don't know about the bottom, but top two-thirds of the league is undeniably better than it was several years ago. You know, it wasn't so long ago, right around the time Greg Sankey was becoming commissioner, that the SEC was putting 3-4 teams into the NCAA tournament. So they've solved the number of bids. You know, the SEC is tied for the top in terms of most teams qualified. They're getting teams in the event. What they haven't solved is getting teams to that championship game, getting them cutting down the nets. It's not been since 2012 Kentucky that an SEC team has won this event. Of course, the Big Ten has an even worse history at winning this event than what the SEC has in this millennium. But just looking at it through an SEC lens, eight teams in the event. Your top-seeded teams are number 2 Tennessee, number 3 Kentucky, and then two SEC teams are on the 4 line. That's Auburn and Alabama. Which team from the SEC would you pick to be your last SEC team standing?
I would probably pick Kentucky.
Okay, Kentucky is in that upper right region. I'm trying to visualize the bracket. Marquette is the 2 seed in that region.
Tough.
Yeah, Houston's the 1 seed in that region.
Yes.
Okay, you got Kentucky. And how comfortable would you be taking Kentucky, say, to the Final Four? How far do you think they're going to get in your last team standing?
I should say it's really a tie, because I have Auburn going just as far as Kentucky. I have two SEC teams. Could I be any more provincial? Two SEC teams. That is the name of our podcast. But I have Kentucky and Auburn both making the Final Four, and both have tough draws. So I could see, I guess if I had to pick one to win the national title, I would pick Kentucky. I just think Kentucky is wondrously talented. And the knock on Kentucky, well, it doesn't play very good defense. And no, it doesn't. Not consistently. But I watched it in two games. It played at Auburn, one of the most hostile venues in college basketball now because of Bruce Pearl. And it held Auburn to 59 points, I think. Then I watched it beat Tennessee in Thompson Bowling Arena. Again, a very hostile environment, 20,000 people packed with Tennessee fans, and Kentucky wins. Those kind of games convinced me that Kentucky is capable of playing a great game. And I think it will be motivated in the NCAA tournament. Kentucky's probably got it 4 first-round draft picks. But I think Kentucky sometimes, these guys, so many of them are programmed that come into this college basketball. It's like they're stopping off for getting a cup of coffee. They're going into it's kind of a way station, and they will move on to the NBA. But still, they can't ignore the NCAA tournament is a huge deal, and everybody knows that, and they know that. And I think it should bring out the best in Kentucky. And it may, on the other hand, it might lose in the second round, but I picked Kentucky to go very far, and I did Auburn as well.
I want to get more into your Auburn pick in a moment, but first on Kentucky, it's interesting you say them because they are my last SEC team standing as well. I have them going to the Final Four. Houston's the one seed in that region. Houston, great on defense. They got some punch on offense, but we saw in the finals of that Big 12 championship game, their offense could disappear at any moment, and that concerns me a little bit with Houston taking them to the Final Four. So I like Kentucky a little bit better. You're right. You would think these guys would be motivated to play defense in the NCAA tournament. This event is so special, so important. I just don't get the sense. It's not like playing in some scrub bowl game where guys are opting out because they don't want to play, 2 7-5 teams playing in the Mustard Bowl. You're not interested. You're opting out. You're getting ready for the NFL draft. I still think the NCAA tournament's a really big deal to guys going to the NBA. And I know people can point at, the last couple years, John Calipari, has fizzled in the NCAA tournament. Kentucky has fizzled. That's true. But if you look at Calipari's history in the NCAA tournament, I mean, I don't know that he's not Rick Pitino or Tom Izzo good, but John Calipari's a pretty good NCAA tournament coach. It's more being a victim of the moment. People that say, he doesn't get it done in March. No, historically, he's been pretty good in March. It's been the last couple years where he's flopped in March. So I like Kentucky a lot, too. And Auburn, you know this, John. I've liked Auburn for weeks, and then they go out and win the SEC tournament, and I think before the bracket came out, I think, okay, I'm taking Auburn to at least the Elite Eight. I love their veteran roster, which showed up in Nashville at the SEC tournament. Bruce Pearl's been to a Final Four before. They play both offense and defense. They're one of the most balanced teams in the country. I was all ready to pencil them in. And then the bracket came out, and I thought, they're going to have to play UConn in the Sweet 16? Thanks a lot, selection committee. And so I have them losing in the Sweet 16, but not because I don't like Auburn. I think if they were in any other region, I would probably take them over the one seed in any other region. I just can't pull the trigger on it against UConn. But I'm curious about your thoughts in taking Auburn to the Final Four.
Well, certainly Connecticut was playing as well as anybody. It's been the most consistent team in the country. And it's a really good team, but I don't think it's a super team. I think it was three NBA picks from last year's championship team. The way this tournament is set up and all the upsets and uncertainty of it, I just don't think a team can win 12 straight games in this tournament. So I'm going back to last year. That's why I don't think UConn will win another national title. And I think Auburn's the kind of team that could beat it. A lot of that has to do with Bruce Pearl. He's had some teams that didn't do well in the NCAA tournament. But this is Bruce Pearl's kind of team. He probably does better with this kind of team than with a couple of superstars, which he had a few years ago. It's kind of that all-out gangbusters approach, playing 10 people. And effort, it's big on effort. And I think because of the way Bruce Pearl coaches, he imbues players with confidence. Auburn has depth, size, work ethic, all that kind of good stuff, and plays great defense. And I think in the NCAA tournament, it has the potential to shoot well from three-point range. I just think that's all about confidence and playing fearlessly in this tournament. Not worried about a mistake, not worried about a missed shot. And that's kind of how Auburn plays. I think this team was built for a tournament run. And go back before the SEC tournament when Bruce Pearl is giving a pregame pep talk to his team. They showed it on the SEC network. He said, we're not here to win one game. We're here to win nine straight games. That's why we're here. Go through the SEC tournament, which it did. That was a tough gauntlet to go through in this SEC tournament because you got eight really good teams. And Auburn did that. And I think that will carry over into the NCAA tournament.
There's a lot of talk about Auburn's seeding after Sunday because the prize for winning the SEC tournament was you get placed in with UConn, the number one overall seed, and you have to potentially meet them in the Sweet 16. I look at that region, John, and the selection committee did no real favors to conference tournament champions. Iowa State wins the Big 12. They get the 2 seed in UConn's region. Illinois wins the Big 10 tournament. They're the 3 seed in UConn's region. And then you have Auburn as the 4 seed in UConn's region. I don't think this is an easy region for UConn. I don't think they really got what they deserved as the number one overall seed, which would be the weakest region, right? That's what you should have earned as the number one overall seed. I don't think this is the weakest region. As I said, you got three other power conference champions right there as your 2, 3, and 4 seeds in that region. I think this might be the toughest region. The East, with UConn as the 1 and Auburn as the 4, this region we're discussing in the upper left corner of your bracket. Would you agree this might be the toughest region, or do you look at another region, John, as being as good or better as this one, do you think?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt it's the toughest region, beginning with UConn, of course. Mm-hmm. But see, those teams you mentioned, I watched all those teams play the last weekend. Illinois is playing great right now. Iowa State embarrassed Houston, absolutely embarrassed it. I know Houston's capable of off-night shooting, and its offense kind of lapses occasionally, but to only score 41 points, that was eye-opening, and I give a lot of credit to Iowa State. See, when I look at that region, it wouldn't shock me if those other teams made the Final Four. I've already mentioned Auburn. But Iowa State, Illinois, it's a loaded region. But you know what, Blake? Sometimes I see what seems to be the toughest region, and those teams get knocked off by teams I would never suspect of being capable of doing that. So yeah, it's the toughest region, but that doesn't mean it's assured of having a national championship team come out of it.
That's right. Yeah, because it might become just so messy in that region. Who knows who's gonna emerge into the Final Four? So we got two of your Final Four teams, John. We got Kentucky coming out of the South. I also have Kentucky coming out of the South, so we're in alignment there. You've got Auburn coming out of the upper left. That's the East. I'm taking UConn to win that Sweet 16 clash with Auburn, and I'll take UConn to the Final Four. So we've got the top half of our bracket set. Your other two Final Four picks in the two in the bottom half of the bracket. Who do you got down there going to the Final Four?
Well, I've got North Carolina making the Final Four. I just Arizona's the number 2 seed there. Baylor number 3. Boy, I think it. I mean, when I look at North Carolina, what it got being a number 1 seed compared to UConn, it's almost as though the committee said, we need North Carolina in that Final Four for TV ratings. We don't need UConn. We had UConn last year. You saw what that got us. One of the lowest ratings ever. So, no, I just think that's kind of set up for North Carolina. I don't trust Arizona to make it. Baylor, and I sure don't trust Alabama. No defense. So, yeah, I really like North Carolina.
All right. Yeah, I agree with you on North Carolina. So we got two out of our three Final Four picks so far we're in agreement on. One thing, I tend to favor teams in this tournament that have a couple of really good veterans. It's fine if you got a stud freshman somewhere on the roster, but I like teams that have a couple guys that are familiar with the pressures of this time of year. And you look at North Carolina and their team leaders, RJ Davis, the fabulous guard who averages more than 20 a game, shoots it well from the perimeter. He's a senior. Armando Bacot, the big man inside, seems like he's been there for, a million years. He was on that team that went on the deep run a couple years ago. And they're heading up this roster. I do think that's the weakest of the regions. North Carolina was the fourth best one seed, and somehow it drew what we both believe is the weakest of the regions. As you said, sometimes that doesn't play out on the court, but I'm with you on North Carolina to the Final Four. So we got a couple blue bloods in Kentucky and North Carolina in the Final Four. You have Auburn. I have another borderline blue blood in UConn in the Final Four. Who's your final four team from the lower right quadrant coming out of the Midwest?
Well, it's no blue blood. This is not a blue blood region. I'll go with Creighton.
I agree with you. Creighton's been a team that I've enjoyed watching all season. I've probably watched Creighton as much as any team just because I like watching them. They have three guys that can score 18 plus, 20 plus every game. Baylor Shireman, Trey Alexander, and the big guy, Ryan Kalkbrenner, inside. It's a team that's gone, that went on a run last year. Some familiar faces there. There is going to be some interesting matchups. Tennessee is in this region as a two seed. I'd love to see that Sweet 16 game between Tennessee and Creighton. Dalton Knecht, kind of the one-man band, if you will. I think he's got one of the weaker supporting casts of any team on the number one or number two line in this tournament. So Knecht going up against those three stars from Creighton, I think, could be a fun one. And then how far will Purdue go with Zach Edey, going to the free throw line all season long in the Big Ten? Will he get the calls in this tournament? Does anybody have someone that can match up with Edie? I think Creighton could with their big man and Kalkbrenner. It's kind of dangerous, John. We got three of the same four Final Four picks.
Wow. This was not rehearsed.
No, it wasn't. I didn't know who we didn't know who each other was taking here in the Final Four. What do you think about that potential matchup between Creighton and Tennessee? And I know you've been kind of high on the Vols for much of the season. At different points, I have been too. But how do you kind of handicap their NCAA potential after we saw them fizzle in their first game in the SEC tournament?
The SEC tournament game doesn't bother me that much. Mississippi State matches up well with Tennessee. It beat it during the regular season. You said Tennessee probably would just as soon get out of the SEC tournament. I don't think it wanted to lose. I don't buy that because Rick Barnes' teams practice hard. That means more hard practices by getting out of the tournament early. The problem with Tennessee, and I thought all along I looked at it as a Final Four team, and the Kentucky game, not the Mississippi State game, changed my mind. When Kentucky came in there in Thompson Bowling and won the game, I think it was 85-81, made 15 and 29 threes, and Kentucky just has a world of offensive talent. It can just beat you from any position scoring. But Tennessee, under Rick Barnes, has always been this terrific defensive team. That's where its heart is. It's in defense. But it didn't defend well in that game. Kentucky got open threes. It got to the basket. Its guards did. That concerned me more about Tennessee. And then you couple that with just Tennessee's history. I know these players haven't been a part of all that history, which includes no Final Fours. And Rick Barnes' great career includes one Final Four. But you can't ignore that. That's a track record over a long period of time with coach and program. I think the players, particularly in an era of social media, go into this tournament with with carrying that burden. I think this team feels pressure in an NCAA tournament. How could it not? You want to be the team that the first team to make the Final Four in school history, and it has enough talent to do that. I just think that will weigh it down. Again, I go back to my main point about this tournament. You have to play fearlessly. You can't worry about a mistake, a missed shot, whatever. You just got to keep going full speed and play as though you have nothing to lose, when in fact you have so much to lose when you're higher seed. I think a higher seed in this tournament, we see it more and more, it becomes almost a burden rather than an advantage.
I'm glad you brought up the history of Rick Barnes in this tournament, John, because I've kind of gone back and forth on this, and here's where I've kind of landed on Barnes. He's not quite as bad of an NCAA tournament coach as I think the widespread reputation is. I mean, even your casual college basketball fans know that Rick Barnes has only been to one Final Four. It was at Texas. He didn't go to the Final Four with Kevin Durant. He didn't go to the Final Four with his best team at Tennessee that had Admiral Schofield and Grant Williams. And, you know, they know that history. I think your common fan considers Rick Barnes a not very good NCAA tournament coach. I think it's a little bit more nuanced than that, because he's not a terrible NCAA tournament coach. He has a history of losing to teams like on the 9, 11, 12 line and like Sweet 16 games, second round games. You know, he's one game over 500 in the tournament. He's got a better NCAA tournament winning percentage than, say, Shaka Smart, who replaced him at Texas and is now, you know, a successful coach at Marquette. It's just that he's in nowhere near the league of a Bill Self or a Rick Pitino in this tournament. A lot of guys aren't, but he's not even in the league of say, a Bruce Pearl or a Kelvin Sampson in this tournament. And I think it's really that it's a couple things. It's that Rick's teams are in the tournament every year. I mean, he's a staple. He's a fixture in the tournament. So he's right in front of your face every year. It's not like he makes it one year and then misses it the next. Sure. No, he makes it every year. And so you're reminded of that history every year. So I think that's one thing that factors in. It's those handful of losses at Tennessee that came, you know, a little bit later, you know, second round or Sweet 16 games against the higher seeded teams. You know, last year losing to FAU, they lost to 11 seed Michigan. One year they lost to Loyola Chicago. One year, so it's not just that they're losing, but they're losing to teams that aren't blue bloods. I think that factors in, and so he's got this reputation as you know, the nickname around East Tennessee. Sometimes when Vols fans are frustrated with Barnes, is second round Rick. I feel like second round Rick is a little bit unfair. I think he should be Sweet 16 Rick. He's gone to 8 Sweet 16s, but just one Final Four. And that's sort of how I would sum up Barnes. Is you can get a couple NCAA wins out of him. Anybody that's made the tournament as much as he has, he's going to have a flop here and there, but he doesn't usually flop in the first round. And so I sum up Rick Barnes as he's a little better than second round Rick, that old nickname. To me, he's Sweet 16 Rick, which would be losing to Creighton in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, and let's just say he beats Creighton. I think it would be really intriguing, a Purdue-Tennessee Elite Ooh. Eight. Purdue with the commonality there in NCAA tournament history, mm-hmm. high-rated teams that just floundered. Gene Cady was there forever and never made a Final Four, as I recall. He very successful, Hall of Fame coach. Rick Barnes is a Hall of Fame coach. So that would be – because somebody would have to win that game. But see, if they came to that, and Tennessee played Purdue a four-point game way back in November when Zagai Ziegler, its point guard, did not play well at all. He was just rounding into shape from a severe knee injury suffered last season, which sabotaged Tennessee's tournament run in 2023. But here's the thing about Purdue. So, I mean, to me, that would be Tennessee's best shot. It's in the very best regional it could be in. When I look as a number two seed, the number one seed, which number one seed would it have the best chance against? I think it's Purdue. It's not Houston. It's not UConn. And it's not North Carolina. It's Purdue. So there's a chance there for Tennessee. But then I wonder how it will hold up against Zach Edey at center, if it has enough post power to handle him. I mean, Purdue didn't lose last year because of him. It's the supporting cast just misfiring from the perimeter. It won't lose because Edey, he's pretty solid. You can count on so much production from him, and he obviously influences the game. Other than his stats, because of the attention he demands. So that to me would be, I think that would be one of the most intriguing matchups in the tournament. If those two teams met, one and two seeds playing for the national championship, for a berth in the Final Four, and yet we both picked Creighton, and that was a pick. You've watched Creighton all season. I haven't. I don't have that confidence in Creighton. It's still kind of a mystery. I just know what it's done recently. It's a good program. But I just think I could just see Creighton winning that thing, even though against those higher seeds because of the history.
When I look at the tournament, John, I almost root for upsets early, you know, Thursday, Friday upsets. But I want a handful of some of the top seeds to still be around, you know, Elite Eight and beyond. I think that's the best type of tournament where you get some of those 3-14 or 4-13 first round upsets, but then you don't have all your top dogs eliminated, you know, when it comes to the Final Four, because I like seeing the stars play, and I like seeing them play more than one game. I mean, as you're talking about a potential Elite Eight of Purdue, Tennessee, that sounds pretty good to me. You know, as we were talking in other areas of the bracket, you know, about Kentucky, what their stars could do, you know, if things fall into place for them this tournament. So, you know, I don't really have a dog in the fight here, but I do like seeing the upsets, like anybody who watches this tournament does. But I'm okay if the upsets don't wreck all the blue bloods, and I want to see a few of the top dogs still around Elite Eight and beyond, because you know, those are the teams with the best players. And I do think it can hurt your Final Four when you look up and you're like, boy, where did all the stars go? You know, I mean, it's great. These are great underdog stories. But where's the big man from Purdue who averages a double-double a game? You know, what's sort of your ideal tournament setting, I guess, or how do you like to see it unfold in a perfect world?
I'm very similar to how you view it. See, last year's Final Four was kind of a disaster. I had no interest in it. I just didn't. And UConn, I think, was the favorite. It was the number four seed. It was the highest seed. It was a Final Four of underdogs. And you're right. We love the underdogs, but we don't love them that much. Well, yeah. We want a Final Four of underdogs. UConn certainly looked nothing like an underdog in last. It's seeding, fourth seeding. I mean, it looked like a number one seed from the get-go, though it didn't merit one based on its regular season. So, yeah, that would be – I would like to see the kind of the best players. I would like to see Tennessee's Dalton connect in a Final Four. I guess I would like to see I wouldn't mind seeing Zach Edey in a Final Four. He's somebody we've been hearing about a long time, a lot of years. So, yeah, if there's some way you could maybe have one Cinderella in there. But it might be kind of better if those teams get to the Elite Eight and then wash out there. If they create havoc along the way, but then the havoc subsides and we have more of a return to normalcy when we get to the Final Four. And maybe, I think a part of this, because I'm not putting any money on my picks, there's nothing at stake here. I don't have anything to lose. So I think, why do I have Kentucky and Auburn in the Final Four? I think that's because I kind of like watching those teams.
Yeah.
I like seeing the ball go in the basket, which is why I like Kentucky.
It is kind of nice, isn't it?
Yeah, the coaches preach defense, but I like seeing somebody hit an open three time after time after time. I don't want to watch Houston score 41 points. I don't want it to win a 54-53 game. I just don't. And Auburn, because of its unique style, playing so many people, and it just plays so hard. And those guys, because they alternate. And the same way with Kentucky, really, its two best players come off the bench, maybe. You could make a case for that with those two guards. So those are teams I like seeing. And in North Carolina, I've always kind of liked watching North Carolina, just its history. It's had different – I know it had Dean Smith forever, but after that, more with Roy Williams, it played kind of a wide-open game. And I'm accustomed to seeing that. It always has talented players. So, yeah, I would like to see some of those teams in the Final Four. I think a lot of people would. And if you have one number 8 or better number 10 seed, so be it.
But as I think back to recent tournaments, John, it was the 2022 tournament that the final – was North Carolina and Kansas. So now North Carolina was an 8 seed that year, so I guess you could call them an underdog. It's really unfair to ever call North Carolina an underdog, but by seeding they were. But you had two blue bloods in the finals. That was a great national championship game. But it was also the tournament where St. Peter's got to the Sweet 16, and there were a number of other upsets as well. That was sort of the kind of the perfect type of tournament, I thought. You had several 10, 11, 12 St. Peter's doing its thing, but there were also a lot of 10, 11, 12 seeds winning in the first round. But there in the end, you had Duke in the Final Four, you had Villanova in the Final Four, and then you had a national championship of Kansas and North Carolina, which was a great game. That was kind of the perfect tournament for me. You get your upsets early, but then in the end, you got stars in the Final Four.
I think, Blake, when we were talking a lot about Tennessee and Purdue a number 1 seed, Tennessee a number 2 seed, but in a way, those teams are underdogs. They're not blue blood programs. They're not accustomed to being in the Final Four. They don't ever make it. So if they were in the Final Four, that to me would be almost like a mid-major being there, despite their seeding and despite their talent. And I think if either one of those teams made the Final Four, it probably would play more relaxed than it would at any other point in the tournament, because the pressure would be off. It would have made it, and then it could just play ball.
All right, so we've been mentioning the possibility of upsets, John. Let's throw out an upset pick if you have one. A first round upset pick. I got a few here, but one I like is the 6-11 game in the West. Clemson's the 6, New Mexico is the 11. New Mexico out of the Mountain West. Mountain West had a really good year, put 6 teams in this field. Didn't get a lot of seeding love from the committee, but did get a lot of bid love. New Mexico, they can really score. I think they could be a matchup problem for Clemson. So that's one that I like there in the 6-11 game in the first round. You got a first round upset you're eyeing?
Yeah, I'll go with a 6-11 also. NC State against Texas Tech. I watched NC State in the ACC tournament. And I think when you look at higher seeds in tournaments, conference tournaments, we just kind of look at it like, it doesn't really matter. Now, UConn won all its games and won a regular season and tournament championships, but it doesn't really affect how I view that team. However, when I see a team that's not supposed to win get on a roll in a conference tournament and win 4 or 5 straight games, a lot of times that momentum can carry over into the NCAA tournament. And when you watch a team playing like that, and I don't have a history with NC State. I haven't watched them during the regular season. I don't say, boy, that's a team that could make a run in the NCAA tournament.
Right.
No, but I saw it in that tournament, and it's just like, wow, this team, it's got it going on. So, yeah, I would take I think that would be a good upset spot. If you got a real I don't know, we always talk about 12 seeds. Mm-hmm. The 12-5 game. Is there a 12 team you could see pulling off an upset?
There's probably a couple, but I'm in danger of falling into the trap of I like the one that everybody seems to like, and that's James Madison as the 12 seed against number 5 Wisconsin. I know Wisconsin made the championship of the Big Ten tournament where they lost to Illinois, but the Big Ten was. It was down this year. This was not a good year for the Big Ten. And James Madison, I watched them a little bit in their conference tournament in the Sun Belt. First of all, I believe they beat Michigan State early in the year. So we've already seen them beat a Big Ten team. They got a few guys that can really score, or I guess I'm supposed to say score the basketball. That's the new big thing now, especially if you're on TV. You don't just score. You score the basketball. Yeah, James
Madison. I don't know how that term got coined.
I don't know.
No sense.
James Madison can score the basketball.
Good for it.
I don't know what else you're playing with. of course, you're putting the basketball in the hole. So I like James Madison. I like you. I like seeing the ball go in the hole. A little bit in this tournament. It's like when I watch golf, some people really like the U.S. Open because they like the U.S. Open usually is at a course that's so difficult. They like seeing those players take a beating. Now, the U.S. Open, that's not my favorite golf tournament. I like the Masters where I can see a guy, go 12 under or something. If I need to watch guys make double bogeys, I mean, I just head out to the local the local Muni, and I can see double bogeys. I like to see some birdies, and in the NCAA tournament, I like to see teams that can score a little bit. James Madison can. I'm not totally buying Wisconsin because I wasn't buying the Big Ten this year. So that's my 5-12. You got one in that line?
Yeah, I would probably take Grand Canyon against St. Mary's.
Now, this is just – I can see some bias forming here. You love the West. You've been to the Grand Canyon a few times, right? Is this a travel influence pick, John?
Maybe so, yeah. I am a West guy, so possibly. And I know nothing about either one of those teams. I really don't.
St. Mary's on the 5 line there. I watched St. Mary's a few times. As you know, I'm a night owl, John, and St. Mary's playing those late night games on the West Coast. They play really good defense. They don't score it as much as some of the other top-seeded teams in this tournament.
Well, I think one of the analysts on Selection Sunday talked about Grand Canyon can score. So it's out west. It can score. It's my kind of team.
There we go. All right, we got our upsets in. We got our final four in. I'll give my championship pick on our way out the door here while you marinate, John. I got all Big East in my championship game. Seen UConn and Creighton play a couple times this year. They split them. Let's make it a 3-match. I don't look forward to the 3 matches that we're going to eventually have in the college football playoff. We've talked about that before. As the playoff gets bigger and you throw in conference championship games, it's going to increase the likelihood of teams playing 3 times in the same season. Well, this is a different sport. I'd be fine with UConn and Creighton playing a third time, and I will take Creighton. I would take UConn to win that all Big East final and do that unlikely thing. And as you correctly said, does not happen very often at all in college basketball. We saw Florida do it, go back-to-back. It's not common. I say UConn does it, and they're the champs. They beat Creighton in the finals. How about you?
Well, since I've been so provincial in picking 2 SEC teams to make the Final Four, I'll just go with an all-SEC final and have Kentucky beating Auburn on a last-second shot.
All right. John Calipari says, quiet down, Big Blue Nation. Forget about the last couple years. I'm still your man. What do you think of me now?
How do you like me now?
Enjoy the madness. We'll be back on football here sometime soon. But who knows? We might return to basketball next week because it'll be the Sweet 16 and beyond. Hope your bracket does better than what mine tends to do. And root for your favorite underdogs. Thanks for listening to this installment of SEC Football Unfiltered.
just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.